And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome back to Hot Takes and Deep Dives, and I am joined once again by your favorites. I have Damian Bellino and Anne Rodeman. Not only are Damian and Anne fellow L-Word historians, but they are also queer as folk historians, and we are here to deliver on our promise slash threat of reviewing the new Queer as Folk, now airing on Peacock. So please welcome back the hosts of You Might Know Her From, Damian Bellino and Anne Rodeman.
Oh, Jess, thank you so much for having us back. What a threat to your listeners. And here we are doing what we promised we would do.
I am a little worried. I really would like a body count and a head count of how many people in the United States and across Europe and across the world who have actually watched the Peacock 2022 version of Queer as Folk.
It's odd. I think having it on Peacock is the number one problem, honestly, because so many people I know are, I mean, I don't know, I'm talking my age demographic, are not using Peacock as like a main streaming service. So I was like, it's on Showtime, right? And then I just kept checking Showtime and it definitely wasn't.
Wait, you legit thought this was going to be on Showtime?
I was just excited. I just assumed. It was like muscle memory going to Showtime to watch Queer as Folk.
Ever since this was announced that it was going to be on Peacock, I've been talking about how strange is it that it is going to be on Peacock. So I've been consciously thinking how strange that is. Yeah. Damian, like, what do you make of it? That literally 1 minute we're watching Housewives Girls Trip and like a flick away, there is like graphic sex happening. It is very jarring.
I want more sex, which I think is why I wish that it was on Showtime, because I don't know, maybe it would be more sex. Although if L-Word Generation Q has taught us anything, that there's not enough sex on these shows, so who knows? Maybe it's just like this new era that we live in. Glad to be back here and glad to talk to both of you about this, because I do feel like this is the perfect hat trick of reboots, because we all discussed L-Word Generation Q as well as the original L-Word, and then we talked about it just like that. And to me, I couldn't help but draw parallels between those revivals or reboots or whatever we're going to call reimaginings and this one. So I'm so glad to be here. And yeah, I think it's weird that it's on Peacock. I really haven't seen anybody talking about it in a real way, aside from like the initial trailer and like the Pulse sort of inciting incident that was, I knew nothing else really. And that Kim Cattrall and Juliette Lewis were in it. Like, I didn't know a lot about it. So,
I mean, you just said like, this is the perfect hat trick. It is insane that Kim Cattrall is in this.
I mean
in fact, Damian, you did tweet that you have a tight five on Kim Cattrall.
Well, I think here's the thing. I like the beginning. I'm just, do you mind if I just unleash
Damian,
the
you,
Kraken?
Damian, I'm going to give you the floor.
I just think that like when I initially watched it, I was like, oh my God, Kim Cattrall's wig. It's like, she's like wearing a wig I bought my mom in the pandemic as like a fun, sexy wig that my mom was like, I love wigs. And I like bought my mom like a $40 like long blonde wig. And I was like, it's like shifted off her head. She's doing some like Southern accent that I was like, it sounds like she's in a sketch about a Tennessee Williams play. But that was where I was going to, and I was like, wow, what did I sign up for? Let me tell you, she found that character in the end, in the latter half of the season, and I was like, she's good. She's still a good actor. But it was a rough road to get there. The character, but I have to say, they planted some stuff in those early episodes with her and her connection to, you know, Brody, to Ruthie and Cher, that really had wonderful payoff. I don't know if we're doing spoilers or not, but I just was like, okay.
Well, we have to do spoilers, otherwise there's nowhere for us to go. And yeah, I mean, listen, this is, okay. And in fact, I'm hoping that the spoil, because we just have to go really in depth with this. And I'm actually hoping that maybe listening to us talk about it in such detail, maybe that will actually inspire people to actually watch this show.
They gotta watch.
You gotta watch. Listen to me. Listeners, listen to me. You need to watch this show.
I think you will have no idea like what is going to happen to Kim Cattrall's character. I will just say, like, she is living out Cynthia Nixon's and just like that storyline on this fucking new show. And I was like, I cannot believe
that's fascinating.
That no one has told me this. Literally no one brought this to my attention. You're right, Jess. Like, no one is watching this.
You said, or one of you or both of you had said, that it is a miracle that that wasn't spoiled for you. You were kind of like, how was that not spoiled for me? And I'm like, I think that's a testament to how few people actually watch
this. Also, Kim Cattrall sings, and she sings musical theater, and no one sent me a video from their phone. Like, are you and Anne watching this? Like, all I do is talk about Kim Cattrall. So the fact that, like, she is not only singing but singing musical theater and experimenting with a queer relationship, like, how are we not talking about
people need to understand it doesn't start out that way. Like, we don't it's like, first of all, Kim Cattrall, do not watch this for Kim Cattrall. Watch the second to last episode. You can watch the last two episodes for Kim Cattrall, but frankly she is barely in the first chunk of it. And it's only eight episodes, which is a problem. Are we totally chaotic already, like 6 minutes in?
Maybe. Maybe we need to set up like how it is different and similar to the OG, or I should say the American Queer as Folk, because I think you talked to Roxane Gay, who was in the writer's room for it, and I thought you had said, like, there's a lot of, like, proxies and, like, connections, and she was like, well, that's not, none of that was, like, intentional. And I thought that was interesting, because I really felt like Brody and Mingus, Mingus seems like a Justin, like, is a high school student involved with Brody, who is sort of like a Brian Kinney, like, I don't know, sexy, playboy. And then his, you know, best woman friend, Ruthie, and her partner, who is a non-binary person. Like, I was just felt like, oh, there are connections to, you know what I'm saying?
Here's the thing. Let's start here, because I'm actually of two minds about this. Number one, when Roxane Gay said that, oh no, it's actually like the characters aren't based, I was kind of like, are you watching this show? Because the pilot really is, we're pulling on a lot of strands. Now, having said that, as the show goes on, it really made me wonder, did they have to pull at the strands of the character parallels? And also, I take a big issue with the Pulse nightclub shooting. As I don't think you needed such a traumatic, inciting incident to kick off the narrative. And in fact, I think a lot of people aren't watching it because of that. Like, we're coming out of a pandemic. Like, I think a school shooting had happened right as this show was premiering. And a lot of people were like, I don't want to watch a thing that's based on the Pulse shooting. And I think that they made, like, kind of a grave mistake by rooting it in that.
I think that's really interesting. And I was trying to figure out how I felt about it, because, like, I was very invested in the pilot, actually. I thought the pilot was, like, pretty exquisitely put together and, like, set the world up really nicely. But I agree. And I was talking to my girlfriend about this, and we were talking about how, essentially, like, you're not earning the right to talk about violence against queer people, which is something that I think is, like, a valid response, something that we can talk about and write about, because you're sort of using it as the inciting incident. It's a little bit of a cheap, like, here, extremely high emotional stakes that we're setting up this world. And it feels a little exploitative, or I would say a lot exploitative, because I was right there with it. It was really intense, but I think it does feel cheap. And I feel like it is probably really triggering for so many people.
I agree that I thought the pilot was captivating. I also feel like it unraveled what the pilot was doing, because the latter half of the pilot to me is wild, because not only is there this shooting and main characters are injured and killed even, but also then, like, Cher and Ruthie are having children. It really, and I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. Like, I kind of was like, oh, this is going to be good. And then I was like, oh, it's going to be bad. But I was into it for the first 30 minutes. And then I kept, when I went back and like watched episode two, I was like, okay, maybe. And then by 3-4, I was like, okay, I'm actually wholly invested. But I felt like it upended, like the rules of the universe started to feel weird. And like the, Mingus having this infatuation with Brody, I was like, y'all were both just in a fucking like shooting. Like the idea that this is romance, the idea that Mingus was pining for Brody. And I was like, you were almost killed. Like, please chill. I get it. Like everyone acts different in trauma, but it just felt like the stakes were so fucking high and crazy, and then the timeline was just so wild. Like, also, we never really talked about Cher giving birth to children then, like, the second episode. Like, Ruthie's like, I'm going to get fucked up with Brody, and like, I hate being a parent. And I was like, you just had these kids. It was suddenly, like, drama in their relationship, and Ruthie being like, I don't want to be a fucking mom, Zaddy. And I was like, you just had these kids. Like, can you have, isn't there any sort of morning glow? Like, no? Okay, got it.
You brought up something that I wanted to talk about, which was like, this wasn't a binge show for me. To me, it just felt like, oh, like I was really invested and I was into it, but I was very aware that this was a lot. Like, it was a lot and it was very heavy. Maybe like the next day I would watch another episode. And then once the melodrama kicked in, then I was flying. Like the first 4 episodes, I think, really are dealing in the heavy aftermath of that. And then once that kind of fell away, I was able to get like sucked into the actual like the romance that was going on and the other sort of like the friendship stuff messiness that was going on. I mean, those last 3 episodes, I thought were utterly spectacular.
Like the episodes that were written by Jacqueline Moore, who is basically writing Ruthie's storylines. I thought episode 2 and 6 were by far the best. And then episode 7 was an emotional roller coaster for me. I was screaming at my television. So, and then I will say, and we'll get to like the finale, but like I will say episode, like I didn't understand what was happening in the finale. Like for me, I was like, was this even like delivered early on in the season? I was like, I didn't believe it. Episode 8, that love did not register for me. I wanted the friendship. I'm interested, but it did not, like I was shocked.
I had a total reaction to, because I thought it was one thing was happening, and then it was clear that, so Brody is in the cab and he's processing leaving town and what it means and his relationship with Ruthie and their friendship falling out. And it's like talking about being he's talking to Daddyus, like the illusion of Daddyus in the cab ghost driver.
Can I say something? Ghost Daddyus, Chris Renfro's performance throughout this show was a total fucking highlight.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think we should do like highlights and lowlights.
For sure.
There were quite a few highlights.
For me too, I kind of thought like most people were good, which again was a surprise, because I just thought it was holding it to like a Gen Q standard. I was like, everybody's awful. Everyone's bad.
The funny thing is, in the original Queer as Folk, those people, I was reading an interview with, you know, like Daniel Lipman, the creators of the Showtime one, they were saying that they could not find actors for this. He was literally asking trainers at his gym, like, can you act? Because they could not cast the original Queer as Folk.
Yeah, because people didn't want to be on a gay show. They thought it would be like kryptonite for their careers.
Yeah, my interview with Peter Page, they were saying like, you can't do this. This will kill your career.
Yeah.
Like he was about to be cast as Jack on Will and Grace. And when he didn't get it,
aside from Sharon Gless, Peter Page is the best actor on that first iteration.
100% agree. 100%.
See, I disagree with that. I think Gail Harold is spectacular.
I know you love Brian Kinney, and I love that about you. I don't know that I agree with it, but I was like attracted to him, but I don't know that I thought he was a great actor. But I don't know. I haven't revisited it in like 15 years.
Oh, see, I do a Queer as Folk rewatch about every 16 months.
Wow.
In fact, I did a Queer as Folk. I was doing a Queer as Folk rewatch while I was in New Orleans.
Interesting. You were really manifesting this new one.
I will say that the New Orleans of it all was a highlight of me for this show, because the Pittsburgh of the American Queer as Folk was like so nondescript because it was what, Vancouver? Toronto. Okay. And like so many of them were clearly Canadian.
Oh, right. They were like in Pittsburgh, but it was filmed in Toronto. Right.
Yeah. And so I felt like they did a good job of like all of the houses, the big houses and the apartments felt like shotgun houses, or like all of the arrangements felt very true to New Orleans. I don't know if anybody like from New Orleans would say that, but as someone that has been there a number of times, I felt like some of that felt really like nice and specific, and I felt like the bar scenes felt true, and that was like a nice, and I felt like it was rooted in something.
well, first of all, this is finally a modern depiction of New Orleans. Like, we're used to kind of like the Anne Rice version or American Horror Story version. Like, this was a modern, accurate depiction of New Orleans as somebody who just lived there for a few months. I mean, I finally felt like we were immersed in a new setting, unlike And Just Like That, which they claim it was filmed in New York City, but I think it takes place on a spaceship. And the L Word, Gen Q, once again, well, you know what it is? It's because they're filming during COVID. That's the problem. Yeah. And so we can't really do, we have to just be in these locked houses. Yeah, I mean, they might as well be shooting that at Bluestone Manor. Like, we're not really, like, getting anywhere. And also, I don't want to be in L.A. And frankly, I don't even want to be in New York. It's like, we've been in these places. So to me, I loved a fresh setting and a modern setting. Like, we're getting to see Frenchman Street. We're getting to see, oh my God, wait, I have the juiciest tidbit for you. And I found this out from Melissa Beck herself from The Real World New Orleans.
Oh my God.
I just finished that Homecoming. It's exquisite.
Okay, you ready for this? The reason that Real World Homecoming could not secure the Belfort Mansion is because that was Kim Cattrall's house in The New Queer as Folk.
Dead.
Wow. And Melissa Beck told me that a few weeks ago.
I am into that.
I'm hopeful that Kim Cattrall is just a huge Real World New Orleans fan and she had to have that house.
That'd be cool if that was in her backstory. She rented it out to MTV. That was her character's backstory. I have to say there were a lot of highlights. I don't know that I even thought about New Orleans being a highlight, but I agree with both of you on that sentiment. I also think that something that I think the L Word Generation Q like doesn't get, and I think something that in Just Like That gets even less, was how to do retcon for the show, how to create like a diverse community, how to like treat people of color, people who are living with disabilities, people of different genders and gender expressions, like how do we include them in the world without tokenizing them or without them, like Micah on L Word Generation Q is like totally siloed off. It's like not the exact same thing that they did to Moira Max, but it is like, but it might as well be because they are not living in the universe. And I feel like the way that New Queer as Folk incorporated like different, it's like not everyone's not just like a gay man. It's like Ruthie and Brody's relationship, like that to me, I was like, has this type of relationship ever existed on television? And the idea that these two people would have grown up together and one transitioned, and just because they're a trans woman, like, doesn't suddenly make them not in community together anymore now that one identifies differently than maybe they did at some point, like, was so fascinating and really, like, I thought made that make more sense rather than, like, Mel and Brian having this sort of toxic, I'm sorry, Lindsay and Brian had this relationship and he was their donor and like Mel was really resentful. I feel like there are parallels in that relationship, but to me, Ruthie and Brody like makes total sense because they grew up together and like had their whole queer discovery like side by side and know each other's lives.
What's funny is that the L Word Generation Q actually did do that exact storyline, except it was written so poorly you don't remember it. Danny and Micah were friends and are supposedly best friends.
Yeah.
They literally did the exact storyline, but you don't remember it because it was written. It's like they don't.
Well, there's no stakes there. Like, you don't care about Micah because Micah isn't entangled with any of the main women protagonists in a real way. Like, Micah is sort of siloed off to like have their own self-discovery as like a professional trans person in the workforce and also like a trans person trying to date rather than being like in the mix and the messy drama. And like, Ruthie is like in the mix, which like I'm into. She is a disaster and I'm like into
Ruthie is the fucking star of the show.
Yeah,
she's incredible. This show did itself a service by not trying to reboot the show so that you're inserting these characters into the all white like fake Pittsburgh world, which is of course what we're seeing in Just Like That and in Generation Q, which, by the way, can I say the bizarro element of watching this show and having Ruthie say to herself at one point while she's holding the baby, like, oh my God, I have got to go finish watching Generation Q. It's actually better than I thought it would be. And I was like, in what universe where am I also getting Juliette Lewis saying Faruja Balk's name out loud? Like, the meta-ness of it all
was
very wild.
That was amazing. I mean, why don't we talk about the characters and storylines that we were most drawn to?
I find Brody and Ruthie's dynamic fascinating. I think that Ruthie and Cher's dynamic is fascinating. Julian and Noah's stuff was, I think, like a little more melodramatic for me. Like, that was a little bit harder to buy, that there was this like drama happening between brothers, but I don't know, because I don't have like a queer, I don't know. I just thought that seemed a little bit too much. I think that the main storyline I was not interested in Mingus. I'm not interested in Brody dating a high school student. I also just,
but
like,
that's the thing, they don't even date.
I think beyond it, like, being creepy and feeling like not of the time and also not earned, because they don't date, doesn't seem to even really be chemistry or connection. It also just seems wild to me that like this teacher continues to participate in it. And obviously it blows up in her face, but the idea that Ruthie's like out like multiple times and like, I'm gonna walk away from this at a party. I was like, you would like leave the party and you would be like, we can't be best friends if you're fucking my student, because I'm gonna lose my job. And obviously all of these things come to a head, but it just felt like too much. Like, I just felt like it doesn't matter how self-destructive Ruthie is, like, she has to know she can't do that. Like, it would be one thing if like she was fucking a student, even maybe I would buy more than like her watching her friend like bring a student around who are like, and like her students are drinking at a party and she's like, I was like, no, like, this character is smarter than this. Like, if this was going to happen, the character needs to be dumber.
I mean, that's kind of what we're signing up. Like, that's the whole basis of her character.
It just seems so extreme.
Even in the flashback, that may be the best episode, actually. When Jesse James Keitel plays Ruthie pre and post transition.
That's episode 6, I think, in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the same episode where it's Mardi Gras.
What storylines did y'all connect with?
Ruthie really was the highlight for me. I felt like Jesse James Keitel delivered the best performance. I felt like she had the most chemistry with each of the people who she was given to play with.
Yeah.
And I felt like this was a real person. Like, I felt like this was perhaps the most fleshed out trans storyline I've seen. Like, the way she was talking about how, you know, I used to be this like twinkie gay boy that everybody wanted. And then when I became a woman, people saw me differently. Like, you don't hear that in other shows. And I've watched everything. I've watched It's a Sin. I've watched Pose. Granted, those are period pieces. Maybe this is because this is a modern, we're finally set in like modern times. But like, you're certainly not getting that on Elle or Gen Q. I don't know about like things like Sense8. That's like, I don't think you're really going to get that stuff in like science fiction. I don't know. I am very, very drawn to trans stories, and I got more flavor of what it is to be a trans person through her character than any other fictionalized characters I've seen on television.
I know Damien had recommended Veneno to me, and I am not finished with it yet, but love it and thought it was stunning. But it like very different in style and tone as well. But
yeah, just if you haven't watched Veneno, I highly recommend. No. It's excellent.
So you know how you said that you weren't into Mingus? Okay, two things with Mingus that I really loved. Number one, the drag artistry. So I thought the cinematography around the drag performances were quite captivating. And I actually wanted to ask you guys, I don't know, Anne, if you're like a Drag Race fan.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Okay. I was curious, did you think that they were basing the drag performances off of Sharon Needles? I know this is a controversial thought, but like, I've never seen like dark gothic drag work in that way since Sharon Needles.
I did not interpret it as specific to her. I feel like there are some drag queens that do sort of like metal or do like gothy drag. So I didn't think it was a direct reference to her. I mean, I could be wrong, but I didn't think. But like, there's a whole show called like Dragula that's like people doing goth drag, and they do. So I feel like there is this culture of like sort of like spooky drags. I kind of wanted Mingus to show something different in the second performance, because I was like, we already saw this version. Like, show me like a pop song. Like, we get it.
You really
it.
Hate him.
You're
not into him.
I just think that like it feels like it lives in a world separate from the other people who all are like 30. And then it's like this person who's like 17. And I was like, this is like, that is like a different story.
Hello. Welcome to Queer's Folk.
Yeah, I just don't think that, like, it doesn't need to be, I don't need Justin to be in this story. You know what I mean? Like, I'm interested in people who are in their 30s. Like, I don't need there to be a high school student in the modern version, because I feel like that isn't, like, because you're never going to be able to serve everybody's story, and I feel like it seems out of place. And then, sorry, the reveal that, like, Mingus has, like, HIV, like, was one of those moments where I was like, wow, they handled so many great things of inclusion, and it's like, now we have this high school student who has HIV, and it, like, feels a little bit like this character. To me, that character feels half-baked and feels not part of the group, because they're not. So I think that is why I don't like them.
Wow, we are really getting it. See, I really liked the HIV reveal and the relationship with, I forget the name of the drag mother, but I love that. Whatever performer Kramer is
Bussy.
Yeah.
Love Bussy.
They're on Work in Progress. They are one of Abby's friends on Work in Progress.
Oh my God, that's right. I didn't even recognize them. That's right. Okay.
Like I had never heard of something called, and maybe they just invented it for this show, but like drag school, is that a thing?
I feel like having like a drag mother, like having like nights where people do like junior drag. Yeah.
Right. I mean, if drag school is a thing anywhere, it would be New Orleans. But yeah, I was into that. I think I really liked everything revolving Mingus, except for the connection with Brody, although it did give us the She Startin' meme.
I think as someone that is outside of the housewife universe, like I was laughing at what I thought was like a really good, simple, clear depiction of like age difference and like mean difference and like what the relationship dynamic was. And so I actually thought that was really funny and smart and like a sly character piece that they like threw in. And I felt like there were a few other nods to the sort of our age demographic people that were watching, which is that like Ruthie like took her name after Ruthie Real World Miami. I was like, fuck
Hawaii,
yes,
Hawaii,
fuck yes.
Hawaii, Real World, Hawaii.
Right, Hawaii, Hawaii.
That was right. Okay. This is bringing in stuff that I loved about this show were the culture references. Mm-hmm. There were so many references to Buffy. We got the Real World. They were singing. Was that Paramore that they were singing in the high school flashback? They trickled throughout. Like there were, of course, the Housewives with Dorinda. I loved, because that's something that you don't get on, you know, our trifecta of the original Queer as Folk and the L Word. They certainly are not people who
I feel
like
the original L Word did a good job. I mean, like here's Sean Colvin, who's not even gay on this cruise, but like Sunny Came Home is a lesbian anthem. I felt like there were moments like that where the show was like throwing things at
you. I agree. I think the L Word doesn't. I think that and just like that, like doesn't, because it'll be like Carol, be like, "What's Instagram?" And it's like, you're in the universe. Like you're a human. You're an intelligent woman. Like why are you so fucking dumb? I agree. Like the pop culture, and I think that speaks to like Roxane Gay being in the writers' room, and also Ryan O'Connell being in the writers room. Yeah. Like, they are pop culture savvy people.
I think Stephen Dunn is a huge Buffy fan. Even the Ferusa Balk, that drag.
I thought that was, to me, I was impressed because I was surprised that I thought that was, that's when I knew the show was maybe for me. And then I was like, oh my God, I forgot that this ends in a shooting. It's very traumatized.
It's like if we were writing a show, I mean, I'm not a writer, but like you guys are, if you were writing a show, these are the types of inside jokes that you would pepper throughout. So for that reason, I felt like this is a good show.
I thought so too, but I think sometimes it can feel like it's sort of a throwaway, or it's like not at the service of the characters. And I actually thought so much of the writing, like that Dorinda, She Startin', like I thought all of those things were in service of telling the story of the characters. And I was kind of impressed because I expected it to just sort of be like schlocky, but I thought they had some like good sex scenes in the first episode. And then I'm trying to remember the specific sex scenes because that was what I was into by episode one, where I was like, they're actually showing sex. I'm really into it. Thank God, because Generation Q had no sex, and it was so depressing the whole time. And then I was very into the fact that like some of them were navigating, like Ruthie was trying to figure out like, do I want to be a parent? Not really. I did this for my partner, but like I still kind of want to be in the party scene and I feel left out, and I'm gonna go do coke and like hang out at this party and then talk about like my gender dysmorphia and how that like what I'm feeling and why like sex is important in my relationship. And then they have a full hot sex scene that is like full frontal, which felt like a really big deal. And I know that there has been like full frontal like trans nudity on TV before, but it felt like it was both hot and character driven, and I was very into that sex scene in particular. So I felt like a lot of like the pop culture and the sex to me didn't feel like just throwaways. I felt like it was actually character development, which feels rare.
This may just be my own ignorance. I always figured that most trans women did not have a penis.
I think lots of people make different decisions, yeah, in terms of like, A, do they want to be like, what is financially a possibility, and like what parts of themselves feel like part of their like sexual being that they want to continue with.
Right.
But I know that Alexandra Billings had a full frontal like leading into sex scene on Transparent, and I don't even know what year that was, but I remember that and that being sort of groundbreaking, but it wasn't in the same context. I think it was like a loving scene, but it wasn't like a hot scene. And I think that's what felt like important about this in particular, because I felt like you got to see like Ruthie have agency over her body, like talk about like what was feeling like what was problematic in their relationship and then like get to have hot sex with their partner.
Can we go back to Kim Cattrall?
Always.
Okay. I really think we need to rewind back to that performance at the Spotted Cat. Well, she can really sing.
I thought she was pretty good for not, like, I didn't think she would be a good singer. And then I was like, okay, she can, like, carry a tune. She can, like, she acted the song.
She was telling. I thought she really sold. I mean, she sings Maybe This Time from Cabaret. Had they hinted at any chemistry between Char?
I mean, they had the scenes where they also had another scene where they hung out together and they were texting and like talking about the kids and laughing back and forth. There was one scene at least.
There was one scene where Brenda comes over to babysit and something happens and like Cher ends up staying there and like there's like hours pass because one of my friend Hallie tweeted at me like, what were Cher and Brenda doing alone together? And I was like, good point. Like it sort of is alluded that they're together. So that's why I actually thought it was a clever, like, way of planting a storyline that seemed really shocking. But then I was like, but I guess maybe we were, like, building to some sort of, like, friendship that was developing, which maybe was an attraction. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, I'm into it. I thought it sold.
She did, Cher did, they did say that they're into messy white women. So I feel like it built it up perfectly.
Yes. Now, the true twist, Brody and Ruthie, you guys were both taken aback by that.
I didn't realize it was building.
Didn't either. And I thought so, for the listeners, you know, Brody sees Cher and Brenda, like, exchange a kiss at one point, and then it's, like, right before he leaves town. So he, like, gets in the cab. Ghost Daddyus is like, you have to be honest with Ruthie. And I was like,
Ghost Daddy.
And I was like,
yes, he is imagining.
Yeah, he's imagining Daddyus. The cab driver is Daddyus. So he's like kind of conversing about what should I do? And Daddyus like, you need to be honest with Ruthie. And I was like, what is he going to be honest about? Like, are we getting a secret in this final episode? And I was like, it's the final episode. We're going to get a secret. So he shows up and I'm thinking he's going to tell Ruthie that he saw, like, you just started this family and I just saw my mom fuck or kissing your partner. And what he ends up saying is, I'm sorry, I know you just started a family, but I'm in love with you. And Ruthie says, fuck you. And I thought, oh, I get it. So this is to like derail Ruthie and Cher's relationship without him having to be honest about Cher stepping out on Ruthie. But then Ruthie fucking kisses him and is like, you fucking asshole. And then he like picks her up in the rain and I was like, so they're in love? That was my journey because I thought like, oh, I wasn't seeing this. And I was like, oh, I get it. He's self-sabotaging in order to help serve her relationship. Like, so he can make her like get out of her relationship, but without having to tell her that Cher did something. And then I was like, oh, no.
Yes, but he is in love with her.
Yeah, that did not feel earned to me at all.
I agree.
I mean, I couldn't believe that they were going to go. I think I was shocked that they went through with it. But I felt like that was the entire purpose of the flashback episode.
Yeah. And I'm not mad at it.
They were in love.
Yeah. And I'm not mad at it for the reasons that we outlined earlier. And Damien, to your point that like this sort of romance, even though Jess, you were saying we've already seen it on the terrible Gen Q. It's like this sort of romance of friends and then also figuring out what it is like we're both queer, but also someone identifies differently. And this person still accepts me, but now we're friends. There's not a romantic component. And then years later, realizing that there is. I'm into it from that perspective, but that is like my intellectual brain. I didn't think the show built that for us. I thought the flashback episode was beautiful, but I think personally, I was more interested in the less melodramatic take, which was like Ruthie holding her fucking bullshit friend accountable. And like Ruthie is also a mess, but like Brody is a fucking like fuck boy. And I didn't see that there was love between them in that way. And I thought the more interesting, like more nuanced and deeply not eight episodes of a melodrama on Peacock version was like, let's figure this out. Like, we're actually not going to talk for an entire season. And like, that's difficult. And like, as someone that has experienced like painful friend breakups, I feel like that's something that is less explored on TV shows and is maybe more interesting to me on a personal level than just the, sort of the melodrama of being like, oh, they're actually in love with each other, which I didn't see coming. But I think from a certain perspective is definitely interesting to me.
I think the seams are showing because we only had eight episodes. Like if you look back to Queer as Folk, those seasons were like 22 to 25.
It was a different era, yeah.
It was a different era golden. Of television. Like, you were getting 22 to 25 episodes a season of Queer as Folk until the end, whereas The L Word was only getting 12 episodes. And Gen Q benefited from the fact that you already were immersed in the world because you had the three characters. And also, and Just Like That benefits from that too. They don't have to rebuild the entire world. It leaves me wondering, why even call this Queer as Folk? You could call this anything else. Take away the name Queer as Folk and erase those little strands. It's clear that this is an entirely different show.
Yeah, I think it sadly is just because, like, they want to exploit something so that people who loved the original will, like, maybe give it a...
Is it just the brand?
It gives them a possibility of, like, give them an added boost rather than trying to sell a new show. It's like they can sell a brand of, like, this is a show that was, like, a BBC show that was a Showtime show, and now we have a new version of it. And it's, like, it's not right. The same show. And I wondered the same thing. I also was like, if you were going to call it Queer as Folk, listen, I was into Kim Cattrall, obviously, and also, like, really surprised with the payoff. But I did think, like, if you were going to call it Queer as Folk because you want it to be in the same universe, but you don't want it to be compared, I loved the idea of it being in New Orleans, but I was like, couldn't there have been a version where, like, Bussy was, like, was Emmett, and Emmett was, like, I don't know, what is the word I'm looking for? Like, not a bohemian, but, you know, like, some sort of, like... bon vivant of, like, New Orleans, who, like, is, like, a house mother to, like, wayward queer kids. And, like, that would have been a way to draw, like, have the same... And I think that in your interview, Jess, if I... correct me if I'm wrong, that Peter Page said that, like, the characters that were written for the American version were, like, owned by somebody that wasn't by somebody. So, like, there was no version where that could happen.
Yes. That's correct.
But in any case, I, like, that was what I thought I could be. Like, I love Kim Cattrall and Juliette Lewis being on this, but it would be cool if there was, like, a queer person from the original show that was somehow, like, incorporated as a new character or as a different character, because then at least it would feel a little bit like, oh, this is why we did it, because it's, like, an extension of the universe. However, that said, I think that that's the problem with Generation Q of The L Word. It's like you're invested in the OG people because you have all 7 years or 6 years of character development. So you're like, oh, I want to see what happens to Bette and Tina and Alice. But it's like I care less about Sophie and Finley because, like, you know, they're underwritten and we've only known them for three episodes.
And they're terrible actors.
And had a
she got it
one
in.
More time. There is an article out there which is kind of fascinating. It's in the Hollywood Reporter. They interview, it's the three different creators of the three different Queer as Folks.
Ooh, okay.
So I definitely recommend checking that piece out. And one of the questions is, they're talking about, like, why it went to Peacock instead of Showtime. So there's a question, like, they're talking about something and the interviewer says, is that the reason your show went to Peacock instead of Showtime, which had recently revived The L Word for a new generation? Oh, I know why, because they're talking about the executive over at Peacock. And essentially, Stephen Dunn says it wasn't as good of a fit, meaning going back to Showtime. And he said subconsciously, there was a gay executive at Peacock and the executives at Showtime, or the executive that they were assigning to the show, was not. And it made me wonder if perhaps that is part of the reason that Gen Q is getting fucked up. Maybe because maybe there's some, like, straight 60-year-old man's hand in there. I don't know. It really made me think, especially based on the Roxane Gay interview, when she was basically like, yeah, it's impossible to write good television because it has all these fingerprints on
totally.
It. It's not a singular voice. And I was like, oh, so, like, how does anything good get made?
Right.
It really made me wonder, like, oh, so that's why everything is shit. This is the best of the three.
I agree. I think the show is by far the best of the three in terms of, like, just quality of writing, my interest in the characters, thinking that they're real people, it being actually hot, it being specific to a location. I think most of the actors are good. I don't think everybody is incredible 100% of the time, but I think everybody has, like, really great moments throughout the whole season.
I agree. I have a question that's a little bit of a pivot, if you don't mind. I just want to pose this because this person hasn't come up at all, which is, like, I think that Johnny Sibley, I don't know if I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Sibley.
I think he's so funny and so sexy. I don't know if he's, like, the greatest actor, but I thought he was fine enough. But I think that something that to your point, I guess, Jess, like, this is Queer as Folk when you're referencing, like, Mingus being younger, is it's interesting that he is sort of positioned as, like, a daddy because he's a lawyer. And I thought that was interesting because, like, he just seems like Brody. He seems like a young-ish person who's probably at that crossroads of, like, am I a professional? Do I need to stop going out? The idea that he has been positioned as sort of like this lawyer daddy to me is interesting because I don't think he reads that way. And what would it have been if he was sort of an older character like Ben? You know, like not like super old, but just like somebody who was like 38 or 40 in was dating Brody or was dating Julian. Or
Is he not that old?
Maybe he just reads. To me, he just doesn't read as a daddy. So I think it was interesting that I felt like I started to realize like, oh, he's supposed to sort of be like the professional, like he's the one who owns the house where like the party is happening. He's the one who's like
he's the most successful of the friends. Surprisingly to me, I thought I was going to be annoyed by Ryan O'Connell, and I wound up loving him.
I thought he was good in this. I also like I watched Special, and I'm like invested in it in a way. And he always has like great character actresses on his show, and I think he's smart and funny. I wasn't in love with Special. Similarly, I thought he was good in this, and I actually thought the sort of like class difference and like ability difference between the two of them was actually an interesting, sweet thing that was explored. And my favorite episode was when they had their friends over, and I was like, oh, this is so like not relatable, but just like interesting in terms of I love that Meg Statler made an appearance as Ryan O'Connell's friend from the mall. I think she's brilliant. And I was like, this seems real to me.
It's interesting because both she and Johnny Sillaby are in Hacks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he is like an emerging star. Johnny Sillaby.
Totally.
He's very in demand.
He's 34, says the internet.
I feel like this isn't going to get renewed.
Oh, that makes me sad, but I don't know. People aren't talking about it, but maybe it wasn't that expensive to make because it's like it filmed in New Orleans and it's a bunch of like up and coming stars with the exception of like Juliette Lewis and Kim Cattrall. So like maybe it will because it'll be like we have to give it a time to grow. I have to say like, you know, I loved the original Queer as Folk for many reasons, but if we're talking about the OG series of L Word, L Word, Sex in the City and original Queer as Folk, it was the worst of those three. So in present day, I think that this Queer as Folk is better than that. Or I think the writing is better. And the like, what's his name is a terrible actor. The one who plays Michael. I can't remember his name.
Hal Sparks.
Who used to act like he was grossed out to fuck. Like he used to like make butt sex jokes and be like weirded out. Like you're a loser. You got cast on this because you host a talk show on E! Like I think the acting blanket is better on the new one. And I think it's like also there's more gravitas to the storylines. You know what I mean?
CBD isn't about what you feel. It's about what you don't feel, like stress, anxiety, pain. Now, I've been taking CBD for years. Whenever I feel anxiety, it helps clear my head, calms me down, and I also take it so that I can fall asleep more easily at night. CBD naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pains, and there's no hangover or addiction. Now, Feels is a premium CBD that will help keep your head clear and be delivered directly to your door. All you do is place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and you will feel the difference within minutes. See, the thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is important and that everyone's dose is different. The best part about Feels is that they offer a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience so that you can find your perfect dose. You can even join the Feels monthly membership that makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order and you can pause or cancel at any time. Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/deepdives and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/deepdives to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. feals.com/deepdives. It can be super hard to connect with somebody on a dating app when it's just predicated on their profile, a couple of pictures, and then some vague texting back and forth. Then you get to that date and you can tell within a few minutes that there's no chemistry whatsoever. That's when I heard about this new dating app called Filter Off. With Filter Off, it sets you up on a really quick 3-minute video date before you waste time getting ready or hopping in the car or the train to meet somebody for an expensive date. So yeah, just imagine the ability to go on a date that is not predicated on someone's ability to send a text message. I love the concept of Filter Off as a video dating app. So go to getfilteroff.com, use promo code DIVES5 to receive 5 extra daily picks. Let's make meaningful connections today at getfilteroff.com. That's getfilteroff.com and use the promo code DIVES5, DIVES5. Filter Off, date the person, not the profile. All of these revivals, there is the trend of too many characters. Like, I talked about this with Roxane Gay. Like, that was the problem with Fire Island. The same problem is happening in... It's because they're trying to check every fucking box, and it's just not necessary.
I didn't feel like there was a bloat of characters. I kind of liked... I felt like the ancillary characters were ancillary.
One of the tropes I hate in ensemble shows like Orange is the New Black, or I'm trying to think of other shows. Lots of shows do this, where every single character gets a flashback episode where you get to see... I was like, I hate that. To me, it's so tiresome. And I was so grateful that this show was like, we got Ruthie's flashback because it was necessary to the storyline, because it then made the dead naming part... Oh, can we talk about Bleep? The use of Bleep?
It was so yes. Excellent.
Like, I thought it was beautiful and shocking. And I was like, oh my God, did my TV do that? And I was like, this is the storytelling. This is really, I thought, and again, I felt like you could tell that the writers were in the room, but not in a way that felt aggressive. I just felt like I could tell that it felt to me like the right people were in the room telling these stories, as opposed to feeling like they were ticking a box. And that was what felt different to me about it. And so I felt like that flashback episode for Ruthie was so earned because of the payoff between she and Brody, which I feel like they did build to really beautifully and felt like really heartbreaking between two friends who are struggling to figure it out. But yeah, I don't know. The multiple characters didn't bother me in this because I felt like they treated the main characters as the main characters. And clearly Ruthie and Brody were the stars of the show.
I feel like what was cool was that, like, well, one, the inciting incident of the shooting, like, bonded many people of, like, different ways of life who were all sort of, like, in the club life. But I also thought that, like, you had Ryan O'Connell and also had Marvin, and they are both people living with, disabilities and different disabilities. But I thought it took off, like, the preciousness where it's, like, on L Word Generation Q, you have Maribel, who's, like, Sophie's sister, who I think is a great actor. And I thought it was, like, she got a sex scene, and it was cool that that happened. But I felt like... there's sometimes like this tokenization or like this preciousness around things where it's like Marvin was a person living with disabilities in a wheelchair, but like he was there and part of it, but it didn't, to me, wasn't like a distraction. I think it was kind of nice to not feel like we had to have one person and everything has to be like on this one person living with disabilities to like convey that story. It's like, I don't know. It's like, it's all part of the whole same shit.
The biggest criticism I've seen online is that Brody, basically, like, just to shorthand it, Brody is no Brian Kinney.
He also is like a very different kind of character. Yeah, Brian was so brooding and like he had that sort of standoffish aesthetic, which Brody does not have. He's like a very different type. And I think at some point I let go of the like attachment to the original storylines, because as you guys said, I was like, what is happening with the Mingus storyline? Is this even like going to be where we're at in episode 8? And it like wasn't at all, except for, you know, he goes on stage to help him and they're friends and it's not sexual. But yeah, I sort of let go of the attachment to the original series also because I was like, thank God there's not a Mel and Lindsay that I have to follow. Like, I know that we're like thinking that it's Cher and Ruthie, but it really isn't in many ways.
They are, I mean... if we never have, I mean, I thought Melanie and Lindsay on Queer as Folk, I mean, I actually really did like Melanie. I think my problem was really with Lindsay.
She's disgusting to me.
Tell me why. Oh, I love this. Tell me why.
There's just something about her aesthetic that I dislike. Is it Thea? Is it Taya? I don't know. Thea Gill. It's not her fault that she is who she is, but I have to say that I found her. How she looks and how she acts is probably not her fault, but it's irritating to me. And I thought she was pasty and irritating and whiny. And I was like, no one would want to be this person's friend. I found Lindsay very irritating. Mel was sort of like abrasive in a way that I was like, that's kind of hot.
Totally.
Well, yeah. Mel was fun.
Mel
like,
was like ropey
funny.
And smoky and like a smart ass and like hates Brian. And like, I think Mel is kind of virtuous, and it's like, you're best friends with Brian Kinney. So you're like, your whole like pious act is like kind of stupid because you're friends with like the town playboy who's terrible to people. And like, I don't like Gale Harold is attractive to me, but like, I don't find his care. I know that you like him, but like, to me, I liked the Brody was like, seemed accessible and fun and like light. I don't know. So like, to me, like he is no Gale Harold. And that is like a plus to me. Like I find, I don't find Brian Kinney something like Brian Kinney seems like a toxic villain to me. So like he's not, his motivations were so confusing because he seemed like he hated himself so deeply.
You felt like Brian Kinney hated himself?
100%. Yeah, he's like Christian Bale in American Beauty. It's like he is like this vessel of like
American Psycho.
American Psycho.
They're all like Kevin Spacey in American Beauty.
This is a new take. Do other people feel this way?
I mean, I never talked about it with anybody. It's just my assessment is he's like this beautiful like person who fucks everything because he quote unquote can, and he his like he's like best friend is Michael, who's like in love with him and is a loser, and it's like and Taya Gill, who whole like gives like forgives every terrible behavior he has. Like, to me, he is a person who is seeking something that he cannot find.
I loved Brian because he was so committed to his gayness in the sense, or his, we'll call it queerness, in the sense that he rejected the heteronormativity that Melanie and Lindsay were copying, and that eventually Brian and Ben, when they wound up getting married, he was like, you're just another fag like that's looking to get married. And I think I see myself in a lot of that, because like it's like performing the script of heteronormativity, like that bugs the shit out of me.
Totally.
And so I think I saw myself in Brian Kinney in that way. And I think even back then I was like, oh, this is really icky. And this, like, you're missing the point of being gay, is that you don't have to do all this dumb shit.
But also, he like said these things to his best friends in like not in a revolutionary way. It was like in a way to take them down. So to me, again, it's like he's coming from a place of like he is alone and in love with a 17-year-old and like being mean to Michael and or Lindsay as a way of like knocking them down a few pegs. Like, I just feel like he operated. And again, I'd love to know like what. I know Gerald Harold doesn't like do a lot of press about Queer as Folk now, which is cool and interesting to me. But like, and, like, I'd love to know like what the inner monologue or like the inner like his inner choices were. But to me, as in hindsight, it all just seems like it comes from a place of like status. Like, he needed to be like the hottest and the correct one. Like, I agree. Like, him being gay and like an open slut was cool to me, because I was very like, wow, people can like have sex and like just have sex. But I think that so many of his, the way he treated the people that were like quote unquote closest to him was like really cruel, and like, I don't know why. Like,
but he wasn't always cruel. Like, he did all these like quietly wonderful things for a lot of the characters. Didn't he get Ted, who he like really couldn't stand? Like, didn't he like bail his ass out of, like, he got him out of some significant trouble?
Yeah, well, people love to make a bold like move to like prove to people that they're a good person after like treating you like you like, I hate this person, but I'll pay for your rehab. It's like, cool. Oh, amazing, Brian, you're amazing. It's like, you've been an asshole to Ted for 7 years. Like, he hates himself because of the way you talk about how you think about what like gay men should be, and he's a loser who like it doesn't have your body and like face. And now he's on meth, and you're like, I'll pay for his rehab, fucking loser. It's like, oh my God, Brian's amazing. And Michael's like, what a guy.
I love that Anne hates Lindsay.
I really,
did you dislike Brian Kinney too?
I was kind of like into Brian, and I think I agree with actual both assessments that like, I find him toxic as a human, but like him announcing that he's a cocksucker in front of everyone, like, yes, and proudly without apology, particularly in like 2002, whenever 2000, I feel like that feels like it would be somewhat revolutionary, even if you put it on now with like a mainstream character. But yeah, I found him to be a dick to most of his friends, and agree with, think a lot of his stuff was about like status and class. And I thought it was gross that Michael was obsessed with him. I mean, so many people were obsessed with him, but I really hated Michael. So I didn't hate Brian in the same way that I hated Michael Novotny so much. And I loved his mom. And I was like, literally, can he die and she can just like be the only part of that clan on this television?
You know,
show?
one of my favorite scenes, my standout scene that I love on the original Queer as Folk, one of them was when Emmett goes to Brian begging him to help Ted. And at first Brian says no, and then he does. Emmett, Peter Pate, was really given a chance to like shine in that scene. And also when Debbie finds out that Michael's new boyfriend, Ben, is positive, when she says, I don't want you dating that guy, when she's like the most accepting, like, right, gay mom of the year. That, right, is so fucking powerful. Like, Sharon Gless is phenomenal. Like, in that storyline, that was like, yeah, my favorite.
Agree.
She's, and then so everything good. Brian Kinney did, said, moved.
I love that he is your icon.
I know, I'm into it.
Honestly, I can still see that scene.
Because I see him as like the Bette Porter. Like, to me, they're like of the same ilk. Yeah. And I guess I'm into that.
Totally. Yeah, that makes sense. Tall, dark, and handsome.
I appreciate, it's interesting. Maybe it's because she's a woman. Like, I like love Bette, even though I know she's toxic. But like,
yeah, she's a nightmare. But none of us are like, she's incredible. We love how incredible of a human she is.
Can I, Anne, do you want to tell, I'm assuming we're almost close to wrapping up, and I just want to ask Anne if she wants to tell Jess the piece of information about Michelle Clooney before.
Oh, I feel like, Jess, you know this already. You've got to know this about Michelle Clooney, right? Like, what her like private life is.
Damien, I think you told me she had a baby with somebody.
With Bryan Singer, director and noted, like,
disgraced director,
pedophile. Like, isn't like, he like a big trafficker?
Me Too-er?
Yeah, he directed like, the X-Men really... movies. And then, like, Elliot Page came out against.
But were, what, were they together, or she just, they just
no,
had
they're like gay best friends.
Or he's a gay, her gay best friend.
He is a gay man. She is seemingly, like, I don't know where she is on the spectrum, but she, they had a baby together, and he is totally disgraced. Probably he'll work again because it's Hollywood. But I was like, what a choice.
And you know Taye Gill wound up marrying a Queer as Folk superfan.
You told me that. You told me that on this very show, and I am so grateful to you, Jess, for delivering that information. And I know that I Googled it after we got off, but it's exactly what I'm going to do as soon as we're done here. I have to find the pictures.
Amazing.
I got to go deep. It's probably like on L Chat. Like that person's profile probably still exists on L Chat.
Speaking of L Chat, what a way!
What a way! Boy, oh boy. Is there anything left to say? Have we said it all?
I think one character we haven't mentioned that I'm a little surprised because I loved this person, but I forgot to write them down. I thought the show had a sense of humor about darkness, which I feel like is one of my favorite things about being queer. And I think that, like I said, the whole ghost fag thing, but then that terrible character that's there, like capitalizing on the tragedy. I loved that because everyone hated him so much. And it was like really dark where he was like giving cars to the parents of the victims.
But wasn't it revealed? Was like, it was revealed that he wasn't even there or something. It was revealed.
Right.
He was like trying Connors, to just.
Yeah.
He was like a huckster. And I was very into that because I felt like everyone in the show was very on board with shitting on that person who was clearly like a Randy Rainbow type.
Well, it also was very reminiscent of Anne and I were there together when they did like the Pulse vigil and Nick Jonas was there and like gave a speech and we didn't even know our friend Derek was there. Like in the background, I was like, get off the stage, Zac Efron, because it was like, why is Nick Jonas speaking at a vigil for Pulse? But it was like, a straight pop star like latching on to the queer community in like a moment of fucking grief to like boost their profile. So I felt like even though this person was, I guess, out in the show, but it was like also like a nod to that. I felt like that moment went viral and it was like a moment at the Pulse tragedy.
Wow. To wrap this up, this has nothing to do with anything except I'm trying to decide and I'm just going to poll the crowd right here. Joel Booster and Janine Garofalo are performing at a comedy club tonight in Chelsea. I'm kind of tired and I feel like do stuff to work tomorrow, but like some friends are going. Like, am I dragging my ass out to go to that?
Honestly, I don't know that you need to, but I'm all in on Janine Garofalo right now because that profile of her was so fascinating and so brilliant, and I can't stop thinking about it.
It was excellent. And I love that even the writer couldn't get an interview with her, and that made me feel right. good about my own life as somebody who has tracked her down in person pre- and post-pandemic, and she said she just doesn't do podcasts.
I respect it.
I think she's cool. And, you know, I was never like a person who was obsessed with her as we were coming of age, per se. But, you know, I interned at the UCB Theater for like 100 years. And she was one of like many celebrities that I interacted with like briefly. But she was very kind. And I like never forget it. She was like very cool and kind. So I don't know. And I've seen her do stand up and she's really funny. So maybe you go for her
She performs all the time. I've seen her like twice recently. Like, okay, do I need to leave? I mean, Joel Booster, like, I saw his Netflix special, and, like, I don't know then how much new material he would have.
I think you're fine to stay in tonight if you want, or, like, have a cocktail outside because it's nice. But I would say you're okay to skip it. Okay. We support Janine in other ways.
I mean, Guys, thank you so much. Tell me what's coming up on You Might Know Her From.
So our podcast, we interview character actresses and non-binary performers, and we are currently on a summer hiatus. So we have a couple episodes out right now that were sort of like summer special episodes. We have one with Dot Marie Jones from Glee and American Horror Story series. And we also have an episode right now with Susie Nakamura, who is on Dead to Me, which is gay and is on Broadway currently in POTUS. And we have our new season is going to drop in September. So we have a bunch of new and exciting interviews coming with cool ladies and anything I'm forgetting.
Just dig into the archives because we have over 100 episodes and we talk to people like Lainey Kazan and Celia Weston and Tashina Arnold and
Rachel Shelley from the L Word, Laurel Holloman, Sepita Mowafi.
Oh my god,
you know where we are.
This is where we land.
Would you guys ever, I'm trying to think, I told you to get Sharon Glass. She would be amazing. Is there anybody
We've tried.
Is there anybody from the Queer as Folk canon who would be worthy, or maybe it really just is Sharon Glass.
Well, now Kim Cattrall, obviously.
Oh, yeah, just Kim Cattrall and Juliette Lewis anytime. I mean, I thought that Jesse James Keitel was excellent, though.
Agreed. I think that we're both, like, she's on our short list right now. And honestly, she wasn't on my radar before this. She's very good.
I love you guys. This was definitely our most unhinged episode.
100%.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.